Welcome to the Jazz Shapers podcast from Mishkon Dorea. What you're about to hear was originally broadcast on Jazz FM. However, the music has been cut due to rights issues.
This is Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkon Dorea. It's business, but it's personal.
Welcome to Jazz Shapers with me, Elliot Moss, bringing the shapers of the business world together with the musicians shaping jazz, soul and blues. My guest today, I'm extremely pleased to say, is Lauren Scott Harris, founder of communications company Scott Ideas, now the Re-Agency, and founder of Earned, an initiative, brilliant by the way, rewarding good deeds with bespoke money-can't-buy items and experiences. Having learned, as she says, the art and science of her industry at PR firm Freud Communications, Lauren launched her own agency, Scott Ideas, in 2010. And by the way, I worked out she was 28 at the time, we'll be talking about that, focusing on mould-breaking dynamic startups. Lauren saw clearly through early clients, the founders of Headspace, the digital mindfulness platform, that a purposeful business can still be run for profit. Having rebranded in 2022 with longtime business partner Emma Harding, Lauren brought to life an idea she'd had while watching people queue for limited edition trainers. What if you could only access those trainers if you came to a hosted and verified beach cleanup? What if we convert the energy people have for things they desire into actions the planet needs? Earned was launched in 2022 with co-founder Lavina Lianiger, and partner brands include The River Cafe, my favourite restaurant of all time, Soho House, cult London pub The Pelican, and upcoming collaborations with a global hotel group and a luxury fashion label. It's fabulous to have you here in this guise, Lauren Scott Harris, now with me in the Jazz Shape as well, because you have been helping me find brilliant people to talk to for, I don't know how long, maybe 10 years. But no one knew that.
Is it a little longer?
I mean, we're a little longer. Both getting old. You're not really very old. I'm a lot older. But we have. So let's just do a quick drum roll for. We mentioned Andy Puddicombe, Headspace, which was amazing. We mentioned, I know, Molly and Joel, Desmond Dempsey.
The lovely Molly and Joel.
The lovely Molly and Joel, Desmond Dempsey, who make incredibly luxurious pajamas and nightwear and things like that. Charles Finch, who was the Dean and DeLuca man and kind of impresario at large. Who else was there?
Frederick Court.
Frederick Court of Felix Capital.
Exactly.
A venture capital firm behind some really famous brands like Farfetch and the like. And there must, I think there's someone else
I
as well.
There are more. I can't
there's more.
Them now.
And the first time I met you, I think I called you a Rottweiler.
You did.
Yes.
And then we decided you were an Australian Shepherd. You were Shep. You were Sheepdog.
This is far too much information. We go, what are they talking about? But here's the serious thing. All those people have been brilliant part of the Jazz Shapers journey, which has been over 12 years now. And you've been behind that stage. And you've been saying to these clients of yours, come, front of stage, you must do your thing. Maybe talk about this, maybe talk about that. And now here you are, front of stage, as a founder of a business. Different, huh?
It's an unusual feeling.
What is that feeling, though? Seriously, because it's PR people that I meet and comms people and people that promote other people very rarely want to be in the spotlight.
Yes, I don't know if I necessarily want to be in the spotlight, but talking about Earned and what it does and why we do it is such an enormous pleasure. And I think probably the first time I met you, at some point I mentioned that I had an idea.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
And that was, I mean, serious procrastination. It took me 12 years or 10 years to get it out there. But yeah, it's so lovely to talk about that I can't help myself.
But going back to that time, I mentioned at the beginning, you were 28 when you set up Scott Ideas. A ridiculously young age. You've been working fresh out of university from whenever that was, 2004. You've been working for about 6 years. Not a negligible amount of time, but not a huge amount of time either. What made you decide that Lauren Scott Harris now was going to do her own thing?
That is a fun question to answer because I don't think I decided. I think someone else decided. And he was an incredible man who sadly now passed away. He's called Willie Roberts. And he ran the most beautiful safari camps in Kenya. And we'd known him as a family for a long time. And every time we'd see him, I'd say, I can't wait to live in Kenya one day. And when I was around 26, he said, do you know what? If you say that one more time, I'm going to just push you out the Land Rover. This is so boring. Either move here or not, but stop talking about it. But I didn't want to live in Nairobi and I didn't want a desk job. So we said, you know, he said, well, what can you do? And I said, actually, I can probably do some PR for the camps that you have. why don't we give it a try? And I said, well, could we barter? I'll do the PR and marketing, but please can I live in the bush with you? I really don't want to live in the middle of the city. And we did it for 3 months. And at the end of that, I was ready to go back to my job. And I thought it had been a lovely 3 month sabbatical. And he said, you're nuts. He said, we'll be your first clients. We'll pay you absolutely nothing, but we will be your first clients. And in Kenya, they just sort of, you know, people have camps when they're sort of 18 or 19. It's just second nature to just do it and get on with it. And that was it. It was the really big shove I needed. And I went back to New York and I called him and I said, actually, all right, I think I'm going to do it. And he said, great, well, I can help if I need some other clients. And he called some friends in Tanzania and that was how it all started. But it wasn't, I'd feel, entirely my decision, but it was a phenomenally good nudge from someone that knew far better than I did.
The age thing is, you know, people always say if you're good enough, you're old enough, it doesn't really matter. You had learnt your trade. There was a bit of the science and the art. Thinking about just going back there for a moment, though, the juxtaposition of the technical, I know how to do PR and comms and think about things, versus the reality of actually running your own business, money in, money out, costs, how do you start to grow? What was the learning curve like for the latter, the actual Lauren being the founder?
It was a pretty steep learning curve, but it was started without any direction. I started because these lovely people in Kenya suggested that I did so. And I didn't then think, oh, I'll build an agency or I'll start hiring people. I just thought, I'll just take a few clients on. And so it was just so iterative, which I'm quite grateful for, because I think if I'd actually seen the whole mountain, I would have probably shied away from it a little bit and not made the leap. But it never felt like a leap. It felt like one more step or one more step.
And just thinking, there is one other guest, of course, who's relevant in this context that you introduced me to, and that's your dad, Peter Scott, one of the initials in WCRS, which was one of the most successful ad agencies of its era, back in the 90s and onwards. Surely, Dad, I mean, you'd seen him build a business and all the ups and downs of that. That must have been either literally in the room or through osmosis you were learning.
Absolutely. And he really couldn't have been more encouraging, actually. He was not a naysayer. He didn't give warnings. He's such an entrepreneur and he had that spirit. I think we always had that spirit growing up. So it just felt so natural and so almost unavoidable in a really nice way. So it never felt scary. It probably should have done. You know, I think there's that wonderful Rudyard Kipling quote, if you can keep your head when all those about you are losing theirs, well, maybe you don't understand the full extent of the problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I definitely did not understand the
which
full
is much better. I wish I didn't understand the extent of most of the problems that I confront every day. I'd be much happier. In terms of the focus that you decided to go down, the route and positioning, again, in the PR and the communications, well, very hard to construct a place. Much easier if you're a brand, much harder if you're an agency. Mm. What made you alight in that, I would call it the world of sort of luxury-ish, but not just luxury, special and unusual? I mean, you've got a better definition of the kind of the client base you were looking at.
No, that's a lovely definition. They were special and unusual, and they were dynamic and they were brave. And it was also a sort of almost happenstance. At that stage of a business, you don't have huge budgets for PR and marketing. You get a bit lost in an agency. So actually finding a founder that you can work with really closely on both sides is brilliant. Andy and I used to speak every single day. And the joy, having been in a larger agency and working on FMCG brands, was that we would just make decisions. You know, and while it was wonderful working with bigger brands earlier in my career, I had an idea that was fed up to someone more senior, that was fed up to someone more senior, that was fed up to the head of Europe on the brand side. And then it came back 3 weeks later, having gone down through, you know, legal or whatever it was. And one, we'd lost enthusiasm for it. And two, it was a slightly different shaped idea than we'd actually wanted to do. And I would just text or call Andy or any of those lovely clients at the beginning and say, what about this? And they go, yeah, let's do it. Mm. And that was so liberating. And some of them were great. Some of them didn't work, you know, but it wasn't about that. It was just about that energy of, right, great, let's try it. Okay, well, if that didn't work, let's try that, rather than feeling bureaucratic, I think.
And finding people that aligned with your, you know, quick ideas, that sense of, I don't need bureaucracy, that sense of elegance and style, or having an aesthetic appreciation for these kinds of clients, finding those people, not easy, I imagine.
Well, I was very fortunate that most of them, I think all of them, found me. And at that point, it was also because I was sitting in this weird spot, which was a British and American operator that didn't have huge overheads. So I could speak, you know, I did call it a different language, but I could speak American and I could be in London and I could be in New York and I could do both things for them. And the difference between me and then an agency was an enormous amount of money. So at the beginning, it was this sort of sweet spot of being able to be really hands-on and really dynamic with the founders, but also, you know, charging a lot less than any of the competitors.
Mm. Sounds like a good recipe. That's why it's done so well. Stay with me for much more from my business shaper today. It's Lauren Scott-Harris. She'll be back in a couple of minutes. Right now, we're going to hear a taster from the Michigan Academy Digital Sessions, which can be found on your podcast platform of choice. Michigan Derez, Ashley Williams and Michael Rose, a senior associate at DRD Partnership, discuss how companies can navigate their AI strategy.
The Michigan Academy Digital Sessions. Conversations on the legal topics affecting businesses and individuals today.
The headlines tend to be quite doom-mongering. For the average person who, you know, doesn't take more than a maybe cursory interest in this issue, their current view of it would probably be quite negative. As in, we can create deepfakes, we can undermine elections, it's going to start replacing people's jobs. These are the things we read about all the time. But there is space out there for kind of well-concerted campaigns to show the positive impact of AI as well. And if you're a company that is doing positive things on AI, then I do think there's appetite for people to hear that as well and to get yourself out there, explain what you're doing and show how it's having a real world impact so that people's perceptions of what AI is starts to shift.
The Michigan Academy Digital Sessions. To access advice for businesses that is regularly updated, please visit michigan.com. Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Michigan Derez. It's business, but it's personal.
You can enjoy all our former Business Shapers on the Jazz Shapers podcast, and you can hear this very program again if you pop Jazz Shapers into your favorite podcast platform. My guest there is Lauren Scott-Harris, founder of communications company Scott Ideas, now the Re-Agency, and founder of Earned, an initiative rewarding good deeds with bespoke money can't buy items and experiences. So here we are, 2 years-ish into Earned, and it was the idea that you mentioned years and years and years ago. Just in your own words, describe the idea.
The idea was born out of essentially, sadly, seeing brands kind of reward and encourage bad behavior. Sitting on the communication side, we were being really inundated with a lot of requests from influencers when that all erupted. And in order to kind of get what they wanted from the brand, they just needed a lot of followers. They were at times pretty rude, a little short. This is not meant to be an influencer takedown at all, but the squeaky wheel was getting the oil. And sitting in, on the front line of that all day, every day, and seeing all these brands just sort of dishing out products and trips and wonderful things to these people, and then opening the paper in the morning or the evening and seeing that nurses are going to food banks or, you know, all of these things, it just felt like we as society were focusing on the wrong things and rewarding the wrong things. And I do, you know, I actually genuinely hate getting dressed. If I could wear the same thing every day, I would absolutely love that. I find it a complete bore. So someone that gets dressed 5 times a day, I have a certain amount of respect for, but certainly not more than those working on the front line in an ER. And it just seemed like we were just going off in a wrong direction. So the original idea was the one you mentioned was, you know, seeing all these people queuing outside of Nike Town and thinking, well, what if they didn't have to wait? What if you could make them go and do a tree planting or a beach clean? They'll probably quite enjoy it, actually. They'll probably feel quite good about it. And it's constructive. They'll start talking to one another. Nike will still sell them the shoes. You're just giving them the access. You're earning the access to something amazing. And that idea would not leave me. I would wake up at night thinking about it. I started talking to a few friends about it. And most of them said, yeah, but where's the business? No one could work out where the cash flow was or what was going on. And then a wonderful man who's now become our chairman, his man called Seb Bishop, kept saying, well, he was like, well, think it through. So this was the really funny bit. We started thinking through, okay, let's say my son, Gray, in 3 years' time, sees some trainers that you can only earn the access to. Okay, right. So it's going to be a weekend. We're going to have to do a beach cleanup. Do I really feel like taking him to a beach cleanup at the weekend? Probably not. I'm knackered. But I'm going to go. Fine. I'll go. And we go and, you know, then you're imagining a bit further and you think, and what's happening? Well, the great British summer's arrived. It's hammering it down with rain. And me and my son are doing a litter pick and he starts finding gross things and asking me what they are. I mean, this is a miserable, miserable Saturday. I'm not enjoying it at all. And then Seb kept going, and he was like, I think it, well, you know, what happens next? And I was like, it's just, God, I've just had a really terrible morning. I'm furious. And then, oh, well, then we get our QR codes. And then my son and I go and we get our matching sneakers. Cool. And then someone sees us on the tube and they go, did you do the beach cleanup? Which one did you do? And we start talking about it. And my son and I feel a bit proud about it. And then we go to the pub and, you know, someone asks us what we want to drink and we start talking about our shoes. And then you ask me how my work is going, but I want to tell you about my shoes. And it just suddenly we thought, well, actually, that's PR and marketing. That's exactly what I'd been doing my whole life,
which is trying
to get you to talk about the brand I'm working with in a really positive light. And if that light can be pride and doing something good for the world, and you've done it with your kids or your friends or whatever it is, then surely there's value in that. And not only for the beach getting cleaned, but your mental health, for the brand. Presumably, you know, we like to do nice things and put it on social media so everyone knows we've done something nice.
But also, very simply put, what does the brand do? The brand pays.
Exactly.
There you go. Well, that sounds like a good idea. We'll be hearing much more about that in a moment. I mean, it's a genius idea, isn't it? It's simple. That second time round, before I get into why 2022 in the end, must have been easier once you've gone through the Seb Bishop thing. Was he CEO of Goop? Is that right?
Mm.
Yes, which is Gwyneth Paltrow's business. Must have been easier for you, though, as you looked at the shape of trying to create an entity and a thing. Was it, or am I being fanciful and naive?
You may be being a little fanciful. I think you're giving me too much credit, because the first one was truly done on working cash flow. It was a wing and a prayer. There was no plan. And actually with Earned, there really needed to be a solid plan. But, and I always talk about Headspace when I think about it like this, but when we were first talking about Headspace, no one knew what meditation was. We had to see, do people want to know what it is? Will they try it? If they try it, will they pay for it? If they pay for it, will they pay for it again? You know, not just selling trousers and starting at zero on the assumption that people need trousers. And it was very much the same with Earned. We needed to really check, like, will consumers respond? Will brands respond? Will causes respond? You know, do they want our help or is it annoying? Are brands interested? Will they pay for it? And will people come? So it was, and still is, being kind of written as we go with the need for investment. But, you know, with investment, of course, you're trying to define exactly what it is you're doing and make a really clear proposition. And it's not actually, at the beginning, it wasn't super clear. We just knew there was something in that trainer idea.
But in theory, if a trainer brand, a well-known trainer brand, says, we're in, we want to do 10 of these and we're going to give you X million pounds, and then another big brand in another category says, you know, a restaurant's a slightly smaller thing, obviously, because it may not be a chain, but they say, we'll do X, then you've got to know you're onto something, I imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the brands that did it at the beginning were quite brave. They were confident, and particularly the River Cafe, they were a luxury brand who were then asking people to come litter picking on the river. We'd spoken to loads of luxury brands before that sort of, you know, immediately scrunched up their nose and said, but no, wait, we're selling luxury and you want to talk about
yucky,
you know,
stuff.
Yucky
Why
stuff.
Did they say yes?
I think they said yes because the storytelling of it was so natural. You know, they are looking at the river all day long. It's their inspiration. It's their lifeblood. It's what you're going to the River Cafe. You're going for the food and you're going for this amazing view. So they're seeing this pollution all day long. You know, they're worrying about it. So to tell their customers, listen, we're redefining VIP, actually. VIPs to us are the people that care. They're not the people that have maybe they are still the people that bought a membership and someone can help get them into restaurants. These people have come. They've given us 4 hours of their time. They're welcome whenever they like. And it was such a lovely story and such a clear one for them. It was so tangible. We literally go litter picking right by the little pub down the road called the Crabtree. And what we were surprised by, very happily so, was so we put out this email with them and we said, does anyone want to come litter picking? You can earn your way into being a River Cafe VIP and you can get access to this wonderful lunch menu. It's going to say earned on it. And we had over 1,000 people try and sign up to this litter pick, which is kind of funny. I mean, you can litter pick whenever you want. The litter is the same whether or not you're doing it with the River Cafe. But then the River Cafe called us and they said, listen, we've got some regulars that didn't get in and they really want to come. And we said, well, they don't need to come litter picking if they're regulars. Presumably they can get a table whenever they want. They said, no, they really want to come. Would you please accommodate them? And we were just thrilled. And the story, all the little things that were happening when we were doing this, you know, there was this mum and son who were trying to get a table for Dad's birthday because they'd never managed to get a table before. And there was a guy who ate there every day of his life and he just wanted to meet people that loved the restaurant like he did. And there was a guy who wanted to take a girl on a date and she kept saying no. And he thought maybe if he got a table at the River Cafe, it was going to swing it. And all these little conversations going on, and it was just magic. It was like just a little sort of forum on how much all these people love this restaurant and the lengths they were prepared to go to just even get a table.
Yeah. And the thing that strikes me is in 2022, obviously, we were 2 years into COVID. You've been thinking about this idea for a long time. The community thing obviously starts, it's a big part of what you do and what you've created. But what was the tipping point? Who was the equivalent of the nudger that actually got you over the line for Earned?
So that was two people. That was Seb, our lovely chairman who I've mentioned. I was talking about it a lot more and a lot more frequently, and I told him about it, and he just called and he said, again, exactly like Willie Roberts, he said, are you going to do it or are you going to just keep talking about it? Please stop sending me 125-page PowerPoint decks. They're beautiful, but...
They were nice decks. I remember seeing an early one.
Yeah, you did,
but
see
it was a very pretty one.
And they were very lengthy. I love to discuss it at length. and then the magic was Lavina. So Lavina and I had worked together when she'd been on the client side. So she was running One Fine Stay. And we'd worked together years ago. And at some point, I just sent her the deck and said, listen, I'm thinking about doing this. And I still wasn't doing it. And what I didn't even know was the reason I wasn't doing it is there were so many, I think I thought it was a 100-piece puzzle. And then I opened the box and it was a 5,000-piece puzzle. And then I realized I didn't have some of the pieces. And she literally, metaphorically, turned up with the bag of the missing pieces.
And so
she was like,
here they are. And then I guess the rest is rest is history. And of course, that was one, just very briefly, One Fine Stay. Mm. The founder of One Fine Stay,
Greg,
was another one of an earlier jazz business shaper. There you go. Final chat through you, by the way, Lauren, that should be said. Final chat coming up with my guest today. That's Lauren Scott-Harris, in case you've missed it. And we've got music from The Meters. That's in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondoreya. It's business, but it's personal.
Lauren Scott-Harris is my business shaper, and we've been talking about all sorts of things of lots of use. We've been talking about your first business, which is still going, obviously, isn't it? And then we're talking about, obviously, Earned. In that bit, where you're a founder and then you step away, just very briefly, how have you managed to remain involved and not annoy the hell out of everybody? Although I don't know you haven't annoyed them, by the way, because I haven't asked them, but are you annoying?
I imagine I am enormously annoying, but I try to be conscious of it. I have a wonderful business partner on Reagency called Emma Harding, who I've worked with for more than 10 years. And as I was really thinking about setting up Earned, a couple of things happened. One was we lost most of our clients in COVID.
Right.
It was absolutely brutal. We had wonderful travel clients and just the bottom fell out of it. So I think the difficulty as an agency founder is always stepping back from that day-to-day client duty. But you
had no choice
because they'd choice. Gone.
So that was luck in a way, in a weird sort of perverse way. Yeah.
And also, I am very conscious of the fact that on both businesses, I have incredible business partners. I take them for granted only in that I can't imagine not having them. I can't imagine not having a business partner. And all the time now, I meet people who are just desperate to find a co-founder or a business partner.
And you and Emma talk every day, pretty much.
We talk every day. She's over in New York. Mm.
But is it very natural? Is it just not like work when you chat with her, even though obviously the things are serious?
I mean, we'll talk about work and we'll talk about things that are completely non-work related. And sometimes I couldn't tell you what
But I mean, is it normalised because you know each other so well? So it is about work, but it's, I guess what I'm, the dynamic is really important, especially if you're giving her the keys and you've got to feel safe that she understands, how to unlock all the different doors of the business and all this other stuff. And she has a similar view of the world to you, but not so similar that it's Lauren in disguise, right?
Right.
So all those things are at play. And does that mean that the conversation is just natural rather than, well, here's our agenda and this is what we're going to go and talk about?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm chairwoman, so I try very hard to only be chairwoman. Mm. And she is a brilliant CEO. So it is very natural. And it does feel, touch wood, it feels easy to talk about it. And I think when you've worked with someone for that long as well, you've had a few bumpy moments, particularly the COVID moment. You've had to talk to each other about really bad news. You've had to have all of those really difficult bits that you've just got to push on through. Mm. So when you've done a few of those, we're not scared. We know each other's strengths. We know each other's weaknesses. She particularly knows my weaknesses in a really incredible way, because then we just have always filled in for each other in the bits
And you still do. And then just on the Ernst side, in terms of, I touched on the growing, and I know you want to go international, and I know that technology is going to play a big part in making this work. What are going to be the one or two things you have to do to unlock what Ernst can be, and what's stopping you doing it?
Oh, good question. We had to work out, I mean, at the beginning, it didn't occur to me that Ernst wasn't scalable. I just thought we'll just do loads of events. And of course, you meet people that are far wiser than you, and they just said, you just can't, you know, it's so lumpy. This is not going to be sustainable. So we had to really study what was going on with volunteering and what how consumers were behaving and how brands were behaving. But I'm very excited to say we have designed a platform. It'll come out within the next month. And what we call that loosely is just always on. It means that you'll be able to come on at any point, see something that you would like from a brand. And when you click through, it'll tell you all the different ways you can earn it. So you might want Legoland VIP passes for you and your kids because you don't want to queue for hours and hours and hours. And you might be able to go and do 4 hours of tree planting in Manchester. You might be able to do a litter pick in London. But there'll be different times, different dates, and you'll be joining activities that are already taking place with the causes. You might just be checking into the Felix Project to go and do 4 hours of kitchen prep.
So it's a dating app, essentially. You're sort of matching, I mean, for good causes and brands and people.
Absolutely.
And you're essentially giving people that, here's the list of all the stuff, click here, join in.
Exactly that. And the real joy of that is when we work with founder-led businesses, and the favorite question we get to ask them, we just say, what keeps you up at night? And if they go, I just, you know, my business is whatever, it's pajamas, but it's homelessness that just, I cannot sit with it. It just breaks my heart. And you go, great. Well, let's say that people that are going to get your discount have to go and work with Shelter. And they're like, oh my God, can we really do that? And you go, yeah. And we'll tell you at the end of the month how many hours you have powered of people doing things in your name. Isn't that lovely? And it's that gets really fun with artists and music and all of that type of stuff.
It's brilliant. I mean, it's sort of one of those, oh, right, yeah, that's obvious, isn't it? Yes, of course, it isn't obvious. And is anyone else doing this, or is anyone else trying to do this at scale?
So no one has yet. We always have these triangles in mind of the cause, the brand, and the consumer. And some people have a line, and they'll link two. But no one's done this triangle as yet. There have been some concerts that you've been able to volunteer to get your ticket for, but no one's really taken it into product and made all these connections. So hopefully.
Fingers crossed.
Yes.
A quick thing just before I ask you about your song choice, and we've ridiculously run out of time super quickly. Do you think you're better at business now that you're doing two things, not one?
I think I am better having two completely different businesses and viewing the kind of strengths and weaknesses of the structure of both. And it is also nice sometimes to wear a different hat and step out of something for a moment. So yeah, I think probably.
It's been lovely talking to you. Front of house, not back of house. Well done. She did it. She did it. And she's really relaxed about doing it. It's brilliant. Not an easy thing to do. Just before I let you go, Lauren, what's your song choice and why have you chosen it?
So my song choice is Undecided by Ella Fitzgerald for two reasons. One, I think it's medically impossible not to dance to this song. It is so good. And then secondly, when I put it on in the kitchen, it makes my son start dancing as well. And so it's dedicated to Gray, my son, who, yeah, generally can't bear mummy dancing and singing, but I do it anyway.
Undecided from Ella Fitzgerald, the jaunty song choice of my business shaper today, Lauren Scott-Harris. She talks about being pushed over the edge, as it were, positively to just get on with the business idea that she had twice almost. Do it. Just get on with it. Stop talking about it. She talked about how her team found her. And that comes from real clarity about what you stand for in any marketplace. And therefore, people will gravitate towards you and not, and that's okay too. And then finally, she talked about redefining VIP, about the contagious nature of bringing people together as a community for people who care to get access to stuff that they wouldn't have got before. Brilliant stuff. That's it from me and Jazz Shapers. Have a lovely weekend.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mish Kondorea. It's business, but it's personal.
We hope you enjoy that edition of Jazz Shapers. You'll find hundreds more guests available for you to listen to in our archive. To find out more, just search Jazz Shapers in iTunes or your favourite podcast platform, or head over to mishkon.com/Jazz Shapers.